Welcome to This Day in Pottery History, a series of brief observations, meditations, vignettes, and editorials about the backroads and byways of pottery history that helped shape the pottery world as we know it today, here on this very day in pottery history. I'm your host, Stephen Earp. For images and reading lists associated with these narratives, visit StephenEarp.com/podcasts. And now, let's get going. Episode 9, The Story of How One Thing Leads to Another. Quote, "How far is the southern sky in the eyes of a lone wild swan? The chilly wind strikes terror into one's heart. I miss my beloved, who is traveling afar beyond the great river, and my heart flies to the frontier, morning and night." Unquote. A poem was painted onto a stoneware bowl in the southern Chinese town of Changsha during the Tang Dynasty, around 875 CE. It spoke of tragic longing for a faraway loved one. The bowl's intended owner, however, wouldn't care. That Arab from the Abbasid Caliphate in modern-day Iraq would probably think it was cool simply because it had strange, exotic Chinese writing on it. But that person never saw the bowl. It was found in 1988 among the wreckage of a 9th-century dhow, or Arab trading ship, off the Java Sea island of Beletung. This wreck illuminated the coalescence of several small, local trade routes into a sophisticated international network connecting China to Zimbabwe and all points in between. This evolution also inspired epic pottery innovations. But before getting into that, let's go back earlier in Tang times, to when pottery wasn't terribly valued. That is, ornate polychrome earthenware pottery and sculptures were for burials only. Increasingly outlandish tombs and tomb art prompted sumptuary laws severely limiting funerary pomp. Ceramic funerary art quickly died out. So did the Silk Road from increased instability along that fabled route. And then came tea. Chinese pottery, like its European counterpart 500 years later, changed radically. Pottery, tea wares, immediately caught upper-class attention. A 755 to 763 CE civil war was the final spark, at least for this narrative. Refugee potters fled to Changsha, previously a southern backwater dumping ground for exiled losers from the cosmopolitan north. These refugee potters did pretty much whatever they wanted, including copying popular green-glazed teawares in the Yue style. Yue green looked like jade, which complemented the tea's color. But Changsha's potters were ignored. Northerners thought they came from, quote, a place of melancholy with, quote, dense and poisonous vapors. Location is everything, I guess. Changsha's ignored castaway poets, like its potters, also did whatever they wanted. Poets like Huai Su, the wild monk, invented wild cursive with free, irregular lines and fluid character links. Changsha potters applied this new wild brushwork to their own Yue-inspired green vapor cloud pottery. Such looseness defied conventional Tang aesthetic uniformity. The Arabs, however, loved it. Trade with the Abbasids via those new Indian Ocean routes exploded. Changsha became southern China's major trading and pottery center. This story has many spin-offs. For example, this observation about one of the most common Changsha floral designs, a petaled flower with a central dot. These rosettes appeared here before anywhere else on high-fired Chinese glazed ceramics. Did you know that you could follow this design from Changsha to Abbasid Baghdad, then to Fatimid Egypt, then to Umayyad Spain, then Renaissance Italy, then Anabaptist Moravia, then Moravian North Carolina, and then, finally, to the modern American pottery studio? Imagine your whole shop resting on the central dot of a 1,200-year-old mad monk's petaled flower. To be continued. Thanks for listening, and until next time, remember those immortal words by the poet Longfellow: some will follow and some will command, though all are made of clay.